Hello and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCD&F and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Join thousands of engineers and designers this September at the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. Visit the website at pcbwest.com for information. I ran across today's guest in an article in the Kansas City Business Journal. Fireboard Labs is the creator of a smart thermometer for kitchens or even the grill. The device is cloud-connected, and Fireboard calls it, quote, the smarter way to cook. What caught my attention, other than my love of grilling, was the startup company's decision to ultimately build its circuit boards in-house. So today, we welcome Ted Conrad, the founder of Fireboard Labs, to PCB Chat. Hello, Ted.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having us on.
Ted, you didn't take the conventional path to becoming the founder of a company selling consumer electronics. Would you agree?
We have kind of a saying, if it's hard, then it's probably worth doing. So we typically don't take the easy road. We kind of blaze our own trail, and we've had a lot of fun doing it, but no, I'm happy to dig into the weeds with you and your audience. It's an honor to be with your program, so I appreciate the invite.
You and your co-founder, Steve Brigham, didn't have experience with electronics design or manufacturing before founding Fireboard.
Yeah, that's correct. I guess the best way to describe me is just more of a kind of a tinkerer and I guess a nerd at heart in a way. I've always loved technology. But I remember even as a kid, you know, my dad was, as a hobby, just into ham radio. And so we had a mini electronics lab in the basement. You know, he was tons of soldering guns and different irons and parts and pieces. So I was taking things apart and, you know, kind of playing with them and wiring stuff up as a kid. And then kind of once I got into high school and decided, you know, college, I kind of ended up kind of more in the business, finance, economics world. And I kind of lived there for 14 years. However, got very much into software, building systems and building different things for the investment world. And so this, in a way, kind of brought me back, you know, the love of software and technology and also the love of hardware. So this has been, it's been a lot of fun, and we, you know, like anything with the business, you don't know how it's going to go, but we found some traction kind of in the marketplace for the product, and we've been able to crank it out, as you said, with, you know, building the boards in-house. It's been a lot of fun.
And you founded Fireboard in 2015?
Yep, we started in 15. It took us about 2 years of kind of solid R&D. And that includes the hardware design, and of course, multiple revisions of that kind of prototype testing. We were not building boards at that point in 15. And then, of course, building all the software. We, you know, did the iOS app and the Android app, and then the web front end. And then there's a whole stack of software that runs on the server as well. It took us about a year and a half.
So what gave you the idea for a web-connected digital thermometer?
Yeah, well, and we get that question, and it really does, in a way, it came back to, a simple problem. But, you know, I was outdoors. I just in my spare time, was just kind of playing around with the barbecue. And I was sitting out there, and of course, me being the nerd, I'm sitting here like, why can't I just find a decent thermometer and an app just to monitor this from my phone? And I think that was either 2013 or 2014, And there were a few things out on the market, but nothing that was a nice, cohesive, simple to use solution. You know, a lot of stuff that was just kind of cobbled together or very cumbersome, or you had to open up your network router to open a port to allow traffic through. I mean, it was kind of it was a product that just didn't exist. And so we thought, gosh, you know, we don't know if there's that much demand in the consumer world for barbecue, or if there's more demand commercially, potentially for cold storage, there's restaurants and, you know, cold supply chain stuff. But we thought an IoT based thermometer and then doing it smart and doing it in a simple way with the apps we thought that at least we had a decent shot at building a product and figuring out where we could sell it. And the timing was right for other reasons too. I mean, what I was doing in kind of the investment world allowed me to kind of step out of that and make the transition and you can get a business going and just a little bit of runway. So the timing was right from several standpoints. And I think IoT has just taken off, obviously. That was kind of in that plus or minus 3 or 4 years range where IoT was really kind of taking hold.
Now, I know that many of our listeners know that I live outside of Boston, but I'm actually a native Midwesterner. And for folks who aren't aware, you know, Kansas City really is a barbecue capital of maybe not just the Midwest, but you know, the nation. So I'm wondering whether when you first came up with the concept, you saw all the potential uses for it, you know, whether you immediately knew, hey, look, this could go beyond just backyard grilling and had the potential for commercial applications as well.
We did not really know, to be honest. We thought when we started that, like I said, the consumer product to the barbecue world, and you're absolutely right. It's been kind of it's just been crazy, you know, because I can go down the street, even honestly, just before I, you know, called into you here for the show. I mean, I stopped by, there's a barbecue store here in town. It was test fitting some of the hardware. We have a fan blower that actually controls temperature as well. And I was test fitting that fan, you know, because he has a whole laundry list of different smokers and whatnot. So I was playing around there. So it's pretty handy for selling barbecue products to be in the barbecue capital of the world.
Could you give our listeners a brief explanation of how it works?
Sure. Yep. So it's wireless and it's Bluetooth. And the nice thing with it being Bluetooth is you take it out of the box and you download our app, which is free, but you download the app and it connects basically instantaneously. It's Bluetooth low energy. So that allows you to immediately start using it as a Bluetooth thermometer if you'd like. And then getting it on your Wi-Fi network is as simple as just typing in your Wi-Fi name and your password. And at that point, then the device connects to our cloud, our servers. And then you're completely home free in terms of remote tracking. You know, the device is pushing data to the cloud. And then as long as your phone has an internet connection, you're able to monitor remotely. So it's purposefully done very simply and in a way that almost anybody can take it out of the box and start using it in about 3 or 4 minutes. And that's the feedback we've had, is that, you know, the software just works and it's a nice, elegant piece of hardware to use.
And is it capturing the cooking temperature of the actual meat or whatever is being cooked, or is it taking the temperature of the enclosure, say the grill, the oven, what have you, where the meat is being cooked?
Good question. I should have mentioned it's not really just a thermometer, but it's a 6-channel thermometer. So you can mix and match. You know, we sell ambient probes, which can be obviously mounted anywhere just to measure. And the only difference between an ambient probe and a food probe is really just a little metal sheath that basically encapsulates the sensor. And so we have food probes, we have ambient probes, we have different types of food probes that are a little bit thinner and smaller diameter for different types of meat and stuff like that. And all those can be mixed and matched with the 6 ports that are in the front of our little device.
And so I could step out, I'm doing something in the backyard, I could put this in, you know, attach the probes, go back inside, grab a drink, turn on a ball game. I've got the app on my phone and it'll let me know, hey, look, you know, wake up, dummy. You know, you're at 140 or whatever the internal temperature I'm after. Something like that?
Yep. You know, the big thing is you can set up alerts per channel, and you can set up an alert at a high point. So if it goes through that, you know, for meat, it's going to send you an alert. Or you could set a low temperature alert. Like, for example, if you were concerned about running out of fuel, you know, so temperature drops, it'll give you the alert there as well. Of course, all the history, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to see the graph and the history of your cook. And so that the app shows you that. It's a really neat tool where you're able to visualize what you're cooking.
Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, what caught my eye was Fireboard's decision to install its own SMT line. That's not a move many startups make. I understand you started off using a contract assembler, but fairly quickly switched to in-house. What factors drove that consideration?
I personally kind of love the hardware. And then I think our culture is very much kind of build it in-house, kind of vertically integrated. And so we'd kind of started, I guess it was almost halfway joking about, oh, what if we just brought a line in and started doing this? And then I think we kind of started to think about it more. I mean, our volume was increasing. And one of the guys, actually Jason Bonita, who I think I mentioned it, your name to him, and I think he's maybe even was on your program a few years ago, but he's been building this piece of software called OpenPNP. And so we brought Jason on a few years ago. And so, of course, Jason loves SMT lines, and that's his experience, as well as everything on the firmware side. So we started playing around with this idea. And then at the same time, our contract manufacturer here in town, their business was just expanding. So it was a good problem for them, but their lead times were becoming longer and longer. And I remember I was actually on a ski trip, and you know, it's one of those things where you stop at the warming hut and you look at your phone and kind of check your emails real fast. And I saw an email from our contract manufacturer, and they basically said that they hadn't started on our build yet. And I was expecting the build to be done that week. And so I called them. Yep. I called them. I was like, what's going on here, guys? Like, this is way behind. And we're sitting here, you know, we've got a product to sell, and orders don't stop, you know, so we don't want to be out of stock because people will just buy something else, right? I mean, some people might come back when you're back in stock, but most people will just buy some other product. So that was basically, I kind of joke, I mean, I kind of made the decision there in the warming hut that we were going to bring a line in-house. So, and we went through the process. We went out to, what's the big SMT show? It was out in San Diego a couple of years ago.
Yeah, IPC Apex.
Yep. We went out there and kind of looked around at some of the equipment. And then we pretty quickly had to decide to bring it in and find a location. And it was a whirlwind of activity in a couple months, basically, but it ended up working out pretty well.
And you installed screen printer, placement, reflow oven, and AOI, or do you have inspection on the line, or is that off in a corner somewhere?
We have our optical inspection, but it's using our own eyes. Mm-hmm. We decided to, and we looked at all sorts of stuff. We looked at some used equipment. We decided, I guess it's a Juki RS1 is the main placement machine, and then a G Titan printer, which Juki sells, but I think it's rebranded from another company.
That's right.
Yep. And so, but Juki sold us the printer. So it's a fully automatic printer, Juki RS1, and then we bought a used BTU 8-zone oven. I think that was off of a line that was coming out of Arizona somewhere, but the feedback was, or the advice was, that you're buying a used oven's a pretty good way to go, just because, especially a BTU, they seem to think people thought that was a pretty reputable brand. And so then, of course, we had some small little conveyors in between. And so, you know, I remember the first, it was a whirlwind getting it in, but when we first started feeding boards in, you kind of feed them at the very front and they work all their way down and come out the end of the oven. Pretty exciting feeling.
Yeah. I mean, you know, don't quite compare it to, you know, the birth of a child, but you know, it can feel that way, especially I think if your product is your baby in a way.
Yeah. Internally, we were kind of going through this and of course there's financial risk, but I think if you model it out and you kind of think about the cost and then you think about what your volume is, you have to project what your sales will be or what your assumptions are. But if you set the financial side aside, there's just kind of an operational thing where you're like, is there some problem that we aren't thinking of? I mean, are the boards going to work? It's kind of like you push the green button and then are you going to end up with boards that actually turn on? And I mean, of course, the science, there's no reason why they shouldn't, but you just kind of wonder. And of course, they did. And so that was That was a pretty exciting night. I think we were here till 1 or 2 a.m. getting everything finished that first time.
Having the manufacturing in-house, has that lended itself to any particular redesigns or, I would say, just superior knowledge of your product that you perhaps didn't have beforehand?
Well, the really nice thing, of course, being able to crank out these prototypes, and you really feel, I think, much more free to iterate your design. And it's not trivial. I mean, anytime you set up a program and you have to retool the machine, I mean, that's not necessarily easy. We have it down now to about a day to create a program, to retool the machine. And then if you're building, you know, let's say 6 or maybe a dozen boards just for a short prototype run, we can basically get that the whole thing done in a day. And the lead time for something like a prototype assembly done outside, it's still, you're anywhere between 2 and 4 weeks probably.
Mm-hmm. You have any trouble finding components?
It is a little challenging in terms of the complications of supply chain because, well, we have 3 main products that we're building, 3 main boards, but soon to be 4 and maybe 5. And so all of a sudden, you're talking about hundreds of components, and you've got questions of, you know, something going to be in short supply. So you're working with your distributors. So you do end up taking on that amount of work. But I guess I would say, you know, any company that's interested in solving problems, you know, especially technical problems like the software and the hardware, you know, getting your arms around a building a purchasing process and supply chain isn't rocket science, but it does take some dedicated effort and work and diligence with all those details.
You've had this in-house now 2 years?
Just over a year, a year and 3 months or so.
Okay. Is there anything you would do differently in retrospect?
Well, I mean, possibly maybe done a little bit sooner. I think timing was probably pretty good though. We were a little apprehensive, of course, when we first started thinking about it, but I think looking back on it, we were probably too apprehensive. I think it was not as difficult as probably a lot of people probably make it sound, but it does depend, Mike, I think, on your aptitude, or I guess your willingness to kind of take on the technical challenge. Some companies just don't want to get, you know, their hands dirty with that stuff. But I think we definitely did. So we were building boards, you know, they sent a few guys out to help train us on the machines. And I think the standard process is to come out for a week. And the goal is at the end of that week, you'll be able to produce boards. And we told the guys, we said, hey, look, we've got, you know, our old contract manufacturer isn't doing boards anymore. We've got a huge rush of orders to get out. We have to be building boards within 2 days. And so they kind of looked at us and laughed. And I said, no, I'm serious. And so believe it or not, we did it. So it was the end of the second day. We were tooling up the machine. And that's where I mentioned we stayed up pretty late. And we were cranking out boards by the end of that night. So it was good.
Well, that speaks well to how well your team worked with the apps engineering guys that I'm assuming Juki and maybe BTU or whoever the rep was sent out.
Yeah, they were really great guys to work with. They were accommodating, you know, in terms of trying to push things forward and rush things through. Of course, the placement machine was the most complicated part of it, but everything went relatively smoothly. If there's a learning curve, of course, doing the program and trial and error with kind of making sure the parts are put the right places and figuring out the buttons to push. But again, it was, I would say for anybody that's really comfortable with technology, I think it was probably easier than we thought. I mean, it wasn't super easy. I don't want to say it was easy, but it was relatively smooth, all things considered.
Well, I congratulate Fireboard Labs on its successful launch. That brings us to a close to today's episode. I'd like to thank my guest today, Ted Conrad of Fireboard, and I strongly recommend listeners check out their story at fireboard.com.
Thanks so much, Mike. I appreciate having us on.
And I want to remind listeners that today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. coming this September to the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. The website is pcbwest.com. The course catalog is available now. For PCB Chat, this is Mike Buto. Have a nice day.